It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Puberty may be a difficult time for kids, and the early arrival of this developmental milestone to adulthood may bring additional physical and emotional stresses. As scientists attempt to pinpoint why puberty is occurring increasingly earlier in kids now compared to decades ago, we explore early puberty care. You can call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. David Allen is a pediatrics professor in the Division of Endocrinology and Diabetes at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Allen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Yes. And Jane Mendel here as well, clinical psychologist and an associate professor in the Department of Psychology at Cornell University, where she is director of the Adolescent Transitions Lab. Jane, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here as well.
Jane, let's start with you. The National Institutes of Health saying the average age of puberty or when a child becomes sexually mature is between 8 and 13 for girls, ages 9 and 14 for boys. How is the onset of puberty changing for children?
So it is definitely starting earlier these days than it has been historically. I mean, one thing to know is the timing of puberty has bounced around through human history there. And it really hit an all-time lateness in the 19th and the beginning of the 20th century. But there are records from Hippocrates, from ancient Egypt, showing that it used to be more like 12 or 13. Now, one of the things that's tricky is it can sometimes be a little difficult to measure puberty, but everything speaks to it starting a little earlier and ending at about the same time as it used to. And so it seems to be also a little longer than it has been previously. So it's earlier and longer. So kids are just spending more of their lives during this transition than, as far as we can tell, they have previously.
It makes me wonder why this transition has bounced around through generations, through centuries even.
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, which people are devoting huge amounts of research time and brain power to trying to figure out. And I think there is no simple reason. David may want to jump in and contribute on this as well. But a lot of the hypotheses center on endocrine-disrupting chemicals, life stress, changes in diet and nutrition.
We're going to unpack those things as well. But Dr. Allen, you know, what is your sense here? Why is puberty starting earlier for children?
Well, as Jane pointed out, if we look back from the 1960s, which is kind of these decades where this has been closely tracked, you know, the most maybe apparent change that's happened in the childhood population, it has to do with the adiposity, you know, the degree of obesity and nutritional status. And we know that nutrition is one thing that sort of propels the growth and development of a child forward. So that's one tight association that I think most people agree is playing some role. But the other aspects that were mentioned are also important in terms of life stressors, potential exposure to what are called endocrine disrupting chemicals, some other aspects of our population that have changed with regard to demographics. One thing I did want to emphasize that I think was, you know, that Jane mentioned was that, you know, it's the process. Puberty is a process, and it takes years to unfold. So when we talk about children reaching sexual maturity, that is the end of the process. And I think one of the very important points that was made was that while the beginning of puberty has moved earlier, the end of puberty has moved earlier much less. And so this process, as was pointed out, has been kind of extended for the most part in most of the children that start earlier.
We're talking about puberty with Dr. David Allen there at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Jane Mendel is here from Cornell University's Adolescent Transitions Lab. And you can join in. Questions and comments, 800-642-1234. So, Dr. Allen, what are signs of puberty that are changing for children?
Well, puberty actually is a complex process by which, you know, a certain part of the brain starts to send messages to ovaries or testicles to make hormones that then cause the physical changes, emotional changes, and capacity for reproduction. So, you know, the signs that we're talking about as the initiation of puberty are changes in the size of the testicles in boys, which is a fairly subtle finding, and in girls, early breast development. And then there's a series of stages that occur between that and, for instance, for girls, the onset of menstrual periods. One of the most fascinating things about the puberty system is that this whole mechanism is well in place when babies are in the womb. And what's actually happening in childhood is not that people are being spurred into puberty, but rather that the inhibition of puberty that happens after we're all born is released. And so, as was pointed out earlier, one of the great mysteries that still exists in medicine is, exactly what is that signal? We know a lot of things that play a role, but what actually is the key signal that turns on the timing of puberty is still a bit of a mystery.
Well, let's step back here and look a bit at the mental health picture. Jane Mendel, if a child starts experiencing puberty at, say, age 7, should caregivers be concerned?
I think it would warrant a call to the child's pediatrician and a conversation with that pediatrician. One thing, whenever I'm talking about this, I'm always cognizant of who's listening to me and what might they be thinking about for their child. So one thing I just want to take a little bit of a detour to say is that everything we're talking about is in large generalities across the entire population. That's what we know as a trend, but it certainly isn't meant to describe each individual's experience. But we do know that the earlier kids reach puberty, the harder it tends to be psychologically. I'm sure many of you are thinking that 7, 8, 9, 10, these are children, but they're going through a transition physically that is essentially the start of adolescence. And so from a psychological perspective, it can be very, very hard to become sexually mature, to look visibly older to other people, to have all of the things that go along with looking older happening to you before you're necessarily prepared for it to happen. But in answer to the short question, if we see signs of puberty at age 7, that is unusually early. It's closer to what we think of as precocious puberty versus earlier on the typical side of development. And I would certainly think about calling a pediatrician in that circumstance.
And just for terminology here, precocious puberty, is the frequency of early puberty the same as precocious puberty?
You know, we think of precocious puberty as more of a medical condition, and there are treatments available to deal with it and manage it. And then we think of early puberty as kids who are going through puberty at the expected time, but they're on the early side of it compared to other kids their age.
Okay. You know, Dr. Allen, in terms of early puberty affecting other bodily functions, does early puberty affect someone, the child's height?
Yes. I mean, we all know that the period of puberty is a time when growth rate increases. We are somewhat programmed as individuals. Much of this is genetic, but as we pointed out earlier, there's some other influences that determine when this process begins. But once the puberty hormones are being made, then the growth rate accelerates, but at the same time, the growth plates are maturing. Mm-hmm. So the earlier one enters into puberty, then usually the earlier one finishes growth. And most of us can reflect back on our years in junior high school and high school and recognize the differences that occur there.
The growth spurts.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. UW School of Medicine and Public Health pediatric endocrinologist David Allen with us, and associate professor in the Department of Psychology, clinical psychologist Jane Mendel from Cornell, examining the complexities of early puberty and fielding your questions. You can share comments, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Scientists find puberty is starting earlier in girls and boys compared to generations ago. We examine the complexities of early puberty and hear from you. Call in with a question. You can share your perspective. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. David Allen is a pediatric endocrinologist at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and past president of the Pediatric Endocrine Society. Jane Mendel is here, licensed clinical psychologist, leads the Adolescent Transitions Lab at Cornell University. Dr. Allen, unpack diet, if you could, just a bit more. How much of this downward trend in the age children are starting puberty, is that related to what we're feeding our kids?
Well, it's a very interesting question because it has two dimensions. One is, you know, how much are we feeding our kids? And the second part of it is like what we're feeding our kids. You know, I think there's been a clear correlation between the changes in obesity rates in children over the past 50 years and this change in puberty. And there's some good physiologic reasons why that might happen. We know that hormones like insulin, which tend to be increased when children have greater weight, that can stimulate pubertal development. We know another hormone made by the fat cells themselves, leptin, is an important facilitator of puberty onset. And we know that children that have overnutrition also just in general grow a little bit faster, show some advancement in their development. And so, you know, that part of things is probably evolutionarily, you know, one of the main reasons why we're seeing this trend toward earlier puberty. The second part of your question about, you know, is qualitatively, are there things that we're really feeding the children that affect this or can have some of these hormonal effects? That's a very intense area of investigation right now. What are we call these sort of endocrine disrupting compounds? You know, there is some pretty good information that extremely large amounts of soy, for instance, or soy dependent diets can have some estrogenic effects. There are some other treatments that some families have used, where like lavender oil is another compound that has been associated with breast development. So it's possible that there are some qualitative aspects of exposure, but those have been very difficult to get a handle on, and no one has really yet been able to draw a tight correlation there yet.
And just a follow-up, it seems as if the National Institutes of Health is really looking at substances like found in personal hygiene products and cosmetics and skincare products that might have links to early onset of puberty. What are you watching for there?
Well, what we're watching for is just trying to take a history. Like I said, we don't have enough information to advise families to avoid particular aspects of these compounds that are, for instance, in cosmetics. So I think we need to be careful about doing that, because there certainly is some suspicion that needs to be investigated. But at this point, we don't have enough information to really prohibit exposure. There are a few things that have kind of like been notorious that I've personally had experience with, in particular, lavender oil or some other oils that seem to be able to have some ability to bind the estrogen receptor and cause some changes of puberty. So those are maybe more well-defined, but in general, I don't think we have enough information to make specific dietary recommendations.
Let's bring in Barbara in Cross Plains. Barbara, what is your question?
Hello. Thank you for having this subject discussed. I'm a grandmother of 6 daughters, and my own daughter was noticing her 7-year-old having early onset of puberty signs. And the two of us realized at the same time that was going on, I was premenopausal and I was using a soy supplement to relieve my symptoms. And she was feeding her daughters soy milk and soy products to avoid meat and dairy. So we both wondered, could a soy intake affect puberty? And secondly, please address that 7-year-old who experienced this early onset. She also experienced the mental health issues of mood swings and depression. And so I think that's an important thing to discuss as well.
Barbara, thank you for bringing those two items to the conversation. And Jane Mendel, I'm going to start with you first, especially on the mental health aspect.
Yeah, and thanks for talking about this, Barbara. This is actually the core of what I spend a lot of time studying. One of the things that we know, and this is especially true for girls, although it is true for all kids, it is really, really accentuated for girls, is that kids who go through puberty at young ages are more prone to psychological challenges, particularly depression, but also anxiety and also body dissatisfaction, which is a risk for developing eating disorders down the road. Nobody exactly knows why, and there's probably not a simple answer, but there are a few things that we know contribute, and then there are a couple of things that we have discovered in my research lab can help, which I would like to share with you as well. So a lot of why we think it's hard is because kids are encountering challenges, situations, life experiences, and assumptions from others that are based on how they look, but they're still very much not at the cognitive or emotional level of development that they are showing physically. So they are assumed to be older than they are. It can be sometimes challenging. And I would love to hear from Barbara if you're willing to share your granddaughter's experience, but it can sometimes be challenging to maintain friendships with kids who haven't developed at a similar rate and whose lives suddenly seem very different from your own. And they can also just be treated differently by other people as well. And it provokes a real reevaluation of who they are and where they are. And it's incredibly confusing. We know that kids who think a lot about the fact that they're going through puberty, why it's worrisome for them, what it means in terms of other aspects of their life, we know those kids tend to have a harder time with it. That's called rumination. We see it linked not just with puberty, but with mood changes at other ages. And in my research lab, we have done some work where we had kids, lots and lots of kids, tell us about their lives at puberty. And then we analyzed what they said about it using a form of text analysis. And we discovered that kids who were able to put some form of coherent narrative to what was happening to them, which is called meaning making, that that was actually protective against finding puberty more challenging. Now, the thing that's tricky, I know, right? It was really interesting. Yeah. And also, one of the things that's really bleak about studying puberty is that you can't really do much to change it, and you can't really do much to change the reactions of other people whom you may never see, who might be treating a child differently in some way. But to be able to latch on to a concrete thing such as meaning making that a child can change within themselves is really powerful and was really inspiring for us. So the thing is that the kids who were able to do it naturally in our research, it's easy to wonder if those kids may have had a psychological leg up. But we know from other bodies of psychological research that parents and teachers can build meaning making in kids. And there are ways to do that. And one of the ways to do it is creating a story out of what's happening and connecting the person you used to be with the person you are today. So that is some clear advice that we can give to families and to kids to try to think about who they were, where they are today. What are the threads of continuity across that?
Jane Mendel. I'm sorry. I'm going to just reintroduce you here. Jane Mendel at Cornell University's Adolescent Transitions Lab. Dr. David Allen with us at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Allen, I just want you to be able to chime in here as well. What comes up when you hear from Barbara's story?
Yeah, thanks, Barbara, for the question. One important point I want to make is that many times signs of puberty are not puberty. So there's a distinction between children that present with either, for instance, isolated breast development or sometimes isolated pubic hair, which is a fairly common occurrence and doesn't often signify that puberty is actually beginning. So it's really important to distinguish the two, because the outcome, you know, down the road is different. How you would approach it, as Jane pointed out, psychologically is different. And many times reassurance that this is a self-limited and non-progressing situation is really important and extremely helpful for a family. So it actually sounds, Barb, from your question that that might have been happening. In other words, you know, exposure to a large amount of soy might have resulted in some breast development, that doesn't necessarily mean that the process of puberty is beginning. And, you know, perhaps with a change in the exposure, then things would return to a more normal sequence.
Dr. David Allen there, Chief of the Pediatric Diabetes and Endocrinology Division at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Clinical psychologist Jane Mendel is an associate professor in the Department of Psychology at Cornell, leads its Adolescent Transitions Lab. Call in, be part of this conversation with a question, share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Scientists over the years amass a body of research tracking how puberty is starting at younger ages, and we examine health risks and what to know when kids are transitioning from childhood to adulthood before the average age. As we discuss early puberty care, call in with a question. You can add comments at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. David Allen is a professor of pediatrics in the Division of Endocrinology and Diabetes at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Jane Mendel is a clinical psychologist and an associate professor in the Department of Psychology at Cornell University. Jane, as you talk about narrative meaning-making and threads that help connect childhood and adulthood and finding meaning in girls' experiences, are children who experience puberty early at risk of mental health challenges later in life?
Unfortunately, they are. And we know that, you know, the studies haven't gone super, super far into the future, but they do go into the early 30s. And we see that kids, girls particular, I should specify that all this research has been conducted on girls, but that girls who get their periods at younger ages, and getting your period is, and the age at which you get your period is one of the really clear indicators of physical development and pubertal development. So girls who get their periods at younger ages are more likely to show elevated rates of depression in their early 30s. And this seems to be primarily because they get depressed as adolescents in the aftermath of going through puberty, and they struggle to recover from it. Again, I want to emphasize these are population trends. I worry that it sounds gloom and doomy, although I do think an entire generation of kids going through puberty at progressively younger ages is something we should worry about. But yeah, we do see that the effects are long-lasting. They're long-lasting primarily because once people become depressed as adolescents, it can be hard to shift their lives. And they experience a number of things during adolescence that are enduring or long-term vulnerabilities for mental health, including higher rates of sexual trauma is probably one of the biggest, as well as discontinuing education and high school dropout is another thing that helps explain why girls who go through puberty at younger ages are more likely to show depression in the early 30s.
With the way parents or guardians interact with a child experiencing puberty early, what impact does that have?
You know, there's not been, the main focus in puberty has always been on the peers and a little bit less so on the parents.
Okay.
We do know that parents can scaffold the experience of puberty for their kids in ways that can be helpful. One bit of advice that I often give to folks, which I will share with you here, is that puberty is a biological transition, but it really involves transformation across virtually all domains of life. So yes, there are these profound physical changes, but there are also social changes. There are also emotional changes. And helping kids recognize that puberty involves transformation across a lot of different domains of life can sometimes be helpful for putting it in context, because it's hard to connect those dots for yourself sometimes. Mm. So I think parents can provide a bit of that. And then the last thing I would say is that one of the hardest things, and again, this is for girls in particular, but menstruation is very, very challenging for girls. They're not always sure what to think of it. They're not something that they compare a lot. It is something that tends to be really private and still stigmatized or mocked a little bit within society. And we know that kids who are going through puberty who tend to think a lot about getting their period or tends to kids who tend to be more vulnerable to depression in the future. And so normalizing that transition, providing a little bit of preparation for it, I think is something that is a very, very useful thing to do.
Thank you for that. Let's bring in Nancy now in Milwaukee. Nancy, go ahead.
Hello. I have often heard that girls who menstruate late and have an early menopause, therefore having fewer monthly flux of hormones, are not as likely to ever develop breast cancer. So I'm wondering if you know of charts that support these theories, and is that perhaps not a good reason to try to delay early menstruation for girls?
Nancy, thanks for the question. Dr. Allen, can you field that?
Yeah, thank you, Nancy, for that. That's a very good question. And you know, one of the concerns that families have when girls have early onset of menses, and particularly if they go online and read about it, is some of the health concerns that have been associated with that. And as you point out, there are actually some apparently protective events effects of being particular of late with the onset of menses. Now, having an early period before the age of 10 actually has been associated with early menopause, you know, and greater risk of breast cancer, and having periods very late actually has been apparently has some protective effect on breast cancer risk and uterine cancer risk. Importantly, I just want to point out these studies, these association studies, as Jane has already pointed out, are population studies. So for an individual patient, if you calculate the increased risk, it can be somewhat reassuring to look at that. Secondly, it's been interesting to learn that retrospective a recollection of the date of onset of menses is not as reliable as I think many of us assume. And this has been shown in some of the European studies that have actually followed populations of women from the time they were 10 years of age till they're 55 and been able to track, you know, these occurrences. And those prospective studies have actually had a more difficult time showing some of these associations than the retrospective studies. So I think there's still quite a bit to learn about that. But in answer to your question, yes, if you compare early developing girls to late developing girls, then there does seem to be some protective effects to being late. But there are also some consequences. And that's why, you know, it's a complicated question about whether to intervene and try to stop puberty, for instance, because there can be adverse effects on important features like bone strength. Okay, so a very late onset of puberty in an individual is associated with diminished bone mineral density later in life, and that can have its own complications. So it's a very good question, but it's a very complicated one too.
Dr. David Allen with us at UW School of Medicine and Public Health, Jane Mendel at Cornell's Adolescent Transitions Lab. Call in with questions and comments, 800-642-1234. And Dr. Allen, these studies are coming fast. There was the BMJ, Journal of Nutrition Prevention and Health, suggesting people who get their period at a young age are at a higher risk for diabetes and stroke. Is early puberty an indicator of you know, these types of physical challenges later?
Well, I like the way you put that question, because as an indicator or as a risk factor, yes, I mean, I think it's possible. And certainly with the connections that we've talked about related to obesity or other hormonal effects that are maybe playing a role in the onset of puberty, we know that those particular hormones are also associated with cardiometabolic risks later in life. Another thing that's been observed, in addition to nutrition effects, there's some birth aspects of an individual that also might influence risk. We know, for instance, that babies that are born on the small side have a higher chance of having earlier pubertal onset and also having some of these increased risk for cardiometabolic health later in life. So I think the message there would be, as an indicator, you know, that's another added incentive, you know, in those kinds of situations for emphasis on healthy lifestyle, avoidance of obesity, you know, doing all the things that we can control to try to minimize the, those events later in life.
Jane Mendel, when you talk about, you know, some of the stigma around getting your period, I'm wondering, is that stigma playing out differently for you know, girls of color, for Black girls who go through precocious puberty, and whether that they are treated differently or stigmatized?
So the experience of puberty across race, ethnicity, and culture is so vastly different, and it's so important. We know that for Black girls in particular, one of the things that happens is something that is called adultification, where they are sexualized and treated like adults beginning at puberty in ways that doesn't necessarily seem to hold true for girls of other backgrounds. And that is, of course, reflective of some of the assumptions and the biases that are rooted in our society. I can't speak to offhand if there is more or less menstrual stigma within those communities, because I can't think of an article that has directly addressed that question. So, you know, you're reminding us of how important it is to keep doing studies and thinking about research. But I do know that there are also different ways that people will think of what it means to be psychologically healthy, what it means to thrive. And these also differ by race and ethnicity, and socioeconomic levels and cultural backgrounds and even religions. So there's not really ever a simple story, particularly when we're dealing like a society like the United States, where there's so many different backgrounds, for sure.
Yes. Jane Mendel is a clinical psychologist, directs the Adolescent Transitions Lab at Cornell. Pediatric endocrinologist David Allen is here, professor at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Call in with a question. Share your views, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the IDS Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Research is underway on the potential long-term health risks when puberty happens before the average age in girls and boys. And we learn about the timing of puberty and the effects on kids who start the transition to adulthood earlier than their peers. We have Dr. David Allen with us, pediatric endocrinologist at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Jane Mendel is a clinical psychologist and leads the Adolescent Transitions Lab at Cornell University. You can email ideas at WPR.org with your questions. Let's go to Rich in Rhinelander. Rich, hi.
Hi, thanks. I'm looking back to a Smithsonian Magazine article published about 2 years back about the presence of microplastics in our bloodstreams. And I believe the studies were done on adults, but I'm thinking if microplastics are circulating in my bloodstream, then they probably are just as likely to be circulating in the bloodstreams of little human beings, younger human beings, is what I mean. The other point I wanted to bring up was, it seems to me across generations, our population has become more and more sedentary. I mean, people are discussing purchasing Game Boys for boys when actually boys should be out playing games. And I'll leave it at that. But there
Rich,
seem to be a lot of maybes in this.
Yeah. Rich, thank you so much for the call. Dr. Allen, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Rich, for the question, because it brings to mind the challenge of trying to figure out whether some of these environmental exposures to, as you say, microplastics or other substances could possibly be affecting these systems. And it's complex, because you know, if some of these compounds are able to bind to receptors that are, you know, involved in the puberty process, I mean, sometimes we can see stimulatory effects, sometimes we can see inhibitory effects. Both of those have been kind of observed in some particular situations. So it is a concern. And all I can say is that, you know, people are actively looking into this. I mean, one of the biggest challenges is to try to develop systems whereby you can reliably, you know, track exposure and its effects. And I think that's really kind of where the emphasis is right now. There's been a number of anecdotal reports, but right now I think the emphasis is really on trying to do the kind of quality research that would answer the question. And your comment then about the sedentary lifestyle, of course, well, that's certainly one of the major factors that's contributing to this imbalance between, you know, nutrition in and energy expended and, you know, accumulation of fat mass, which then generates some of these hormones, which stimulates earlier pubertal development. So that's one of the things. If families really want to know what they can do to, you know, try to avoid any unnecessary earlier onset of puberty, active lifestyle, lots of physical activity, optimal body mass index, those are steps that we know can have some effect.
Let's bring in Liz now in Lyons. Liz, hi.
Hello.
What would you like to bring up?
I was just wondering if there's a link between, and it's really for both presenters, if there's a link between the oppositional defiance disorder in girls younger than 10 and the possibility that they might be going through puberty early. Is there some type of link between the two of those?
I'm going to field that to Jane on oppositional defiant disorder.
Sure, Liz, and thanks for asking the question. So oppositional defiant disorder, and just for viewers, this is a psychological disorder that, as its name might suggest, is marked by really recurrent say no oppositional behavior and also temper or irritable mood. I am not familiar offhand with anything that directly links oppositional defiant disorder with earlier pubertal development. We do see that girls who go through early puberty are more likely to show sorts of acting out, rule breaking, delinquent behaviors later in adolescence. But I think one thing that we should talk about that happens is that kids are, you know, they're not coming into puberty fresh from, you know, developmentally shrink wrap packages. They're coming into it with all of these life experiences. Some of them may have had already been experiencing psychological difficulties, early states of depression, early indicators of other disorders. And one of the things we know is that puberty pretty much worsens everything psychologically because it's the kind of transition that can tap people out. So one of the things we can see is that maybe if a child were experiencing irritability, temper, oppositionality as a child, and then they transition into puberty, puberty is going to more than likely worsen all of that because of the nature of the transition.
Liz, thank you for the call. Let's bring in Heather in Rhinelander. Heather, go ahead.
Hi, I have a quick question for the endocrinologist. I had a daughter that was a twin, and one of them only ended up getting growth hormone shots through the Children's in Minnesota. And did get her menstrual cycle later in life. And now I'm concerned because she's very sporadic and concerned about everything else delayed. And as I'm listening to you talk about menopause, cancer, I have a feeling that it may be difficult because it was difficult for me to get pregnant. So I'm wondering if she will maybe go through some of those things, and a lot of those things will be delayed. Do you have any knowledge or studies on that?
Thanks
for the question. Yeah, you know, of course, I'm the information you're providing is somewhat limited in terms of like what might be going on with all the hormone systems of the body and not just the growth system. One thing to remember is that, you know, the delayed onset of puberty, the delayed onset of the first menstrual period is not associated with increased risk of breast cancer or uterine cancer, or necessarily early menopause. So I think that that's more a concern of the early bloomers. So I think that, and of course, I don't know how old your granddaughter is right now, so it's hard to know. Remember that when puberty begins, even when the first menstrual period begins, there's a 12 to 18 month period, you know, before we really expect that there'll be regular cycles. And so we have to provide a lot of reassurance in those early years that this can be a variation of normal and, you know, not to overinterpret some irregularity at that time. So I don't have a better answer than, you know, with the information that you've provided. And maybe the endocrinologists that are still following her would be able to answer your question.
Heather, thank you for that. A group we haven't discussed here, Jane Mendel, is if a teacher that knows that a student is experiencing puberty before their peers, should the teacher do anything differently to address that child's needs?
So what I would say is that schools and social experiences can be hard for early developers. And we know that early developers are just statistically speaking across the board more likely to be targets of rumors and victimization and bullying by their peers than other kids. So I would hope that teachers keep an eye on those dynamics that can be happening and work not so much with an individual child, but with the classroom surrounding them that might make puberty more challenging for them.
Hmm. Dr. Allen, can precocious puberty, can it be slowed down naturally at all?
Excellent question, because that's frequently what families want to know. Obviously, everybody's probably heard in the press, there are some very effective, you know, treatments that can essentially halt puberty, but these are extraordinarily expensive and very involved. And I think, you know, sometimes can take a situation that's a variation of normal and send a child the message that there's something really wrong with their body, which we'd like to avoid. So I think the things that we have talked about in terms of like increasing physical activity, minimizing obesity, I mean, those are going to be probably in a family's armamentarium, the most effective ways of, say, slowing the onset of puberty. Whether or not those things, once puberty has begun, whether they can slow the progression, I don't think we really have information. We don't have good data to suggest that. But those would be the steps that we would, you know, advise. And in terms of all the other points that we've made about future potential health risks of precocious puberty or early onset puberty, you know, those can also have benefits for the long run. So,
well,
difficult to achieve, but that's probably the best advice that we would have for families.
Thank you both for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Dr. David Allen there, pediatrics professor in the Division of Endocrinology and Diabetes at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Jane Mendel, clinical psychologist and leader of Cornell University's Adolescent Transitions Lab. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.